Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the latest episode of The Shamrock. I'm Pete Sampson, joined as always by my co-host Matt Fortuna. Today's special guest, as Notre Dame gets into the interesting part of its ACC schedule, David Hale from ESPN, who, Matt, you're very familiar with in a previous life at ESPN when you were both ACC insiders together. I think that it was about the time Notre Dame was moving over to the ACC, and I think that might be an interesting place to start, David, like, because, I mean, you cover college football from a different perspective than I do on the ground here in South Bend. And we're talking to Marcus Freeman and some players this week about, you know, do you watch the ACC? Do you sort of follow the ACC? And they're like, not really. They're in it, but not in it. Over the years, how has sort of the view of Notre Dame within that league changed, evolved, adjusted in any way from your point of view?
I mean, it never seemed like the most logical cultural fit. You know, it was, you look at the rivalries that Notre Dame has traditionally, and they're largely in the Big Ten and the Pac-12. There's not like this great history between Notre Dame and the ACC, but it worked because the ACC was sort of desperate and Notre Dame needed a place for its other sports. And so I think what you get, look, unquestionably, this relationship has been good probably for both sides, but definitely for the ACC. I mean, Syracuse and Notre Dame are going to play a game that matters a whole hell of a lot more this week than it would be if Syracuse was playing almost anybody else. So these games are good for the league. They draw interest for the league. They help TV ratings for the league. They make the league more attractive, without question. But I think inside the league, if you talk to coaches and a lot of ADs, there's sort of a frustration, like they feel like they're being used a little bit. I think there was a lot of frustration in 2020 when John Swofford just welcomed in Notre Dame to the league for 1 year during the pandemic to help Notre Dame out of a jam just because we're good friends and all. And people around the league are saying, like, man, this was our chance to strong arm them into joining full time. I don't think there was any chance that was ever going to happen anyway. But it's sort of that's the conversation, is that people feel like somehow Notre Dame is getting more out of this than the ACC is getting. But a lot of that really comes from a place of the ACC as a whole understands what the big picture college football landscape is and understands that really the only way they survive it in any fashion that looks similar to now is to get Notre Dame to join. And frankly, I don't know anyone inside the league who seriously thinks that's going to happen one way or the other. So there's just a little bit of an animosity because I don't know. It's, you know, it's like any relationship. There's a power dynamic issue and everybody thinks Notre Dame holds all the cards and the ACC is just getting pushed around.
Yeah. You know, when it first came to be, I guess 2012 was when it was announced. 2014 was when it was implemented. I thought, man, the Notre Dame got a sweetheart deal here. Like, they don't need to worry about their schedules. They've got a much better bowl lineup. At the time, they were not, you know, annually completing for playoff spots the way that they are for the most part now. I just thought it was a huge get for Notre Dame. And now you look at it, I mean, 2020 was the pandemic year and the ACC had a record revenue distribution pretty much because they welcomed Notre Dame in as a full member that year. The ACC title game, even though it was a dud, was very meaningful with two teams that ended up making the college football playoff that year. Syracuse, to your point, they're going to have an orange out this week. It's going to be a huge event on campus. We've seen primetime games at Clemson, at Florida State, at Louisville that probably otherwise would not have been primetime sold out affairs. It just seems like the power dynamic certainly has tilted in Notre Dame's favor here, particularly with the recent waves of realignment in the Big Ten and in the SEC. I just think, you know, if the ACC is on a little bit shakier ground than it was two or three years ago, we all can do the math. It's not a great place to be if you're the ACC. Now that they've got stability in terms of a grant of rights and contracts and whatnot, But I just think I'm with you. I just feel like there's definitely been, and maybe part of this is the commissioner switch as well, a new voice at the head of the table in Jim Phillips. But it just seems like there's definitely more resentment now than there had been in 2014, 2015.
Yeah, I remember David Cutcliffe saying in that 2020 season, like, I'm fine with Notre Dame joining for a year if they're going to share revenue with us. And I was like, David, they're actually making less TV right. revenue than you are, right? It's not helping. It's not changing the landscape. Them simply playing the game, showing up and playing the games is what's bringing in money for you.
It is. It's amazing to me, no matter how many times we write it, that Notre Dame loses money by being a partial member opposed to a full member of the league. I think that there are people, and like I'm sure Pat Narduzzi is chairman of this group, like that think there's a printing press of galleons, like somewhere in the administration building at Notre Dame, printing out all this money that then they put on top of the dome. It's not doesn't quite work out that way. I'm also fascinated by, like, I think when this got started, the Tom O'Briens of the world were like grumbling about the bowl, like, oh, Notre Dame's going to swipe all these bowl bids. And then you look at it 9 years later, I think it's happened 3 times.
It happened more in the beginning than it did when they got good.
Music City Bowl, they were in the Citrus Bowl, and then the Camping World Bowl. And the rest of the time, either Notre Dame has been good enough to be New Year's Six or college football playoff, or bad enough to not go to a bowl at all. This year is sort of between the bad enough to not go to a bowl or like going to swipe one of those bids. But it just, to me, it's just like, if I'm the ACC, there hasn't been this like knocking every other ACC team down the ladder of bowl bids either, which I feel like was kind of one of those big gripes early on.
Yeah. And I mean, part of it is that the ACC has itself to blame for some of this anyway. Like the signature programs have not played like signature programs outside of Clemson. And that's so, yeah, Notre Dame, when you start looking at that whole pie and say, like, who's interested to a bowl host, like Florida State would be interesting. Miami would be interesting. Carolina would be interesting. Those teams have not warranted being in these conversations. So, like, I mean, it shouldn't exactly be shocking news that Notre Dame draws more interest than Wake Forest does. Like, and it's not a knock on Wake Forest. It's just reality.
It's funny you bring up that example, because I remember at ACC Media Day this year, that was, again, right after, I guess 2 years ago, it happened during the SEC expansion. This year happened right after the Big Ten expansion. And a lot of the questions the coaches got were expansion related. And Dave Clawson said something to the effect of, well, if it was about investment, we'd be at the head of the table. We put $100 million into our football program over the last 2 years. Unfortunately, we're the smallest Power 5 school in the country, and that's ultimately what dictates this. You were at Clemson, right, Saturday for Syracuse?
Yep, Clemson. I was there.
So you got to see the play-in bowl for Notre Dame, I guess we'll call it, for lack of a better term, since those are the Irish's next two opponents. What, I mean, you were there. I think everyone had a hot take out of that game for both teams. What was your kind of more measured, nuanced take? And I read your story, just talking to the Clemson players and coaches afterward about how they are insisting there's not a quarterback controversy, despite what everyone just saw with their own two eyes. What'd you take out of that? I mean, were there really any takeaways from Syracuse in that game? Because everyone's been talking about Clemson and, you know, Q's almost being.
Yeah. Well, my hot take on Syracuse is, and I feel pretty emphatically about this as a Syracuse alumnus, why the hell are you not giving the ball to Sean Tucker with a 14-point lead? Yeah. The guy had 2 carries in the second half. It is mind-boggling to me. This, look, I'm not an X's and O's guy. If I had to coach a football team, it'd finish 0-12. But you know, you hear coaches all the time saying, like, "Well, we were trying to take what the defense gave us." You're up 14. You have one of the best running backs in the country, and you give him the ball twice. Like, I don't care what the defense has given you. You put the ball in your best player's hands. So that's my hot take on that. Clemson is a fascinating situation, because one of the things that I have not heard a lot about, it's sort of like the story's been about DJ and benching him and what that means. Cade Klubnik didn't exactly come in and light right. the world on fire, right? Like, how different would this conversation be if he had thrown for like 150 yards and 2 touchdowns in the second half there after he came in? Like, I think that's a big question that they haven't really answered. And two, I genuinely wonder why you do this if you're not going to have your quarterback come in and throw the, like, he threw four passes after he came in. Was it worth the headache of having to talk about a QB controversy for a guy who threw four? Like, DJ could have handed the ball off just as easily as Klubnik did. And frankly, I mean, look, if you don't have a real kind of ticky-tack personal foul penalty on the sideline on that first drive, I don't know how much differently this story plays out, too. I asked Brandon Streeter after the game, what happens if this similar type of situation comes up in the next few weeks? You're playing Notre Dame or you're playing Miami, and DJ doesn't look great. Does he have to look over his shoulder? Are you going to make this move again? And he didn't really give a great answer to that. Like, yeah, we know DJ is going to be the starter moving forward. But and Streeter essentially said, well, he doesn't have to be perfect, but he has to play well like everybody does. Well, I don't think you would have ever had that conversation about Trevor Lawrence or Deshaun Watson, no matter how badly they played in any given game. So what it says to me is that, yeah, DJ is still the starter, and understandably so. But there is a point in which that can change. And that is a conversation that Dabo has not wanted to have for the last 12 months. So the fact that he's doing it now, or forcing that conversation to be had now, to me says this is something significant. I don't think it completely upends what you think of Clemson at this point, but to me it does say, like, you know, I don't know. The comparison that I made in a story that I wrote earlier this week is that it reminds me a little bit of that 2017 Alabama team, where you feel like you've got a national championship caliber roster, and you've got a quarterback who you've won with, but you might have this younger quarterback who you think you can really win with if you give him the chance, but you're not quite sure that you can make that change. And I remember talking to Dabo that after that season. And so Clemson played Alabama in the Sugar Bowl that year, and that Bama got a pick six off of Kelly Bryant right before the half that really turned that game. And Dabo said they were expecting Tua to come in the second half if that play hadn't happened, if the game was still close. And then, of course, we saw that. Yep. So, and then we saw that happen in the national championship game 2 weeks later against Georgia when they were losing at halftime. So I look at it very similarly. I don't think Clemson wants to make a change, just like I don't think Saban wanted to make that change. But when push came to shove, it happened. And I think that could be the story of how this season, there's not like a team that's going to super challenge them the rest of the way. Notre Dame obviously has been what they are this year. Miami looks like a train wreck, but let's say they get to an ACC championship game against maybe North Carolina, who can put up points and their offense is struggling. Do you have to make that change? If they get into the playoff and the offense struggles, do you have to make that change? I think you do.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I want to jump back to Syracuse. Like, how good are they? Because I haven't watched a ton of them, but I watched how the Purdue game ended. I watched some of the Virginia game against my own self-interest. Like, what? I can't tell how good they are, because I was shocked when they were. I thought maybe they wouldn't get blown off the field last week because Clemson isn't that great offensively for the reasons you just detailed. But should I reevaluate Syracuse as, like, actually a pretty good team based off of what they've done to NC State and their backup quarterback, and then last week going the road to Clemson?
They are. I think the defense is genuinely good. Like, I don't think that's a mirage by any stretch. Their linebacking core is really talented. They play like this 3-3-5 scheme. It's very similar to what NC State does too, where they essentially use their defensive front to just fill up some gaps and then free their linebackers to go make plays. And in the secondary, particularly if Garrett Williams is healthy for this game, they're potentially very, very good in the secondary. So they can challenge you defensively, and they're not going to make anything easy. And we saw that against Purdue, I think, was a good example of a very good offense that didn't move the ball at all against Syracuse for most of that game. offensively, they're talented where they're talented, but that's a very narrow window. So Sean Tucker's a really damn good player. And Dabo, after the game, basically said he's the one guy we thought could beat us. So, again, you might want to give the ball to the one guy that the opposing coach is worried about. Garrett Schrader is a fine quarterback who is extremely mobile and can challenge you because he can beat you with his legs. And he's gotten better as a thrower. He's not great, but he's gotten better. They have one really legitimate receiving target, and that's Arondé Gadsden. I don't know that he's a special player, but he's a unique build, so he's a matchup problem. And in Robert and I's offense, he does a really good job of taking advantage of players like that. So you look at like Jelani Woods last year at Virginia was a very good example of a guy that Robert and I's offense just made him look great because he was a matchup problem. So I think if you start to take away some of those matchup advantages, which I think Notre Dame can do, it's going to really stress Syracuse offensively. And that's, I think we saw a good bit of that against Clemson at times, particularly in the second half. And how does Syracuse respond? I would certainly hope better than they did last week. So it is a better team than I think they have gotten credit for. But, I mean, it's still Syracuse. They're recruiting at a very different level than Notre Dame or Clemson or those teams are. So the margin of error is not big. One thing that I'll be very interested to see this week, and I think it was one of the best advantages they had. I'm a numbers guy. I'm a data guy. I don't really tend to believe in a lot of the
momentum.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Momentum, yeah. But Syracuse undoubtedly went into that game Saturday with a lot of confidence. And Garrett Schrader said during the week, like, we think this is our year. We think we can do it. And they went out and played like a confident team. Like that, they looked that way. So now that all that confidence sort of unraveled in a bad second half of a game they lost that they very easily could have won, do they walk away from that game saying, see, we can definitely play with the big boys and we'll do it against Notre Dame? Or is there this sort of hangover from how it ended and saying like, well, maybe we aren't that team and maybe we aren't that good? Because I frankly think that Syracuse's belief that they're better than people think has been one of their better advantages this year.
Yeah, I'm with Pete. I have no idea what to make of this team. I mean, I hate to say I'm not sold on them even after almost upsetting a top five team on the road, but I have the same question you did, which is, does that one first loss domino into something else? And you look at that schedule, I mean, I know they're favorite this week, but they could be underdogs in every game until the finale against Boston College. They've played every game except for last week and at UConn at home, and they have a sneaky good home. The Carrier Dome or JM Wireless Dome to me is almost like the Bryce Jordan Center at Penn State, where you also basically have to create your own energy because it's such a weird quiet almost environment that just trips you up because you don't even realize you're playing in an FBS football game against a Power Five team because it's so different from everywhere else. I really don't know what to make of this team. I mean, Purdue threw the game away against them. Virginia didn't show up until the second half. The schedule has been, it's completely backloaded, which is why we're going to find out about this team. I just don't, you know, I was commenting with someone yesterday who said, this is why, in a comment to a story in The Athletic yesterday, someone said, you know, this is why you don't pull the trigger so quickly on a coach who's on the hot seat. Look at Syracuse paying off with Dino now. And I want to say it's his second winning season in 7 years. I don't think this is like some amazing feat. Now this program does not invest at all compared to everyone else in the ACC and they couldn't afford to fire him. But I'm frankly not so. I thought Dino coached him out of the game at the end last week. His clock management was terrible. I think he made a really good hire with Robert and I, who's probably going to be gone next year with whoever Bronco Mendenhall ends up returning to coach, because I think that's going to happen. I just don't know what to make of this team or this program coming into this. And you look at this line, I believe Notre Dame opened as a favorite, and now it's +3 in favor of Syracuse. Like, this line scares the hell out of me both ways, because those are two teams that we don't know a thing about as we enter Halloween weekend.
What,
I didn't have a question there. That was more of a comment.
Yeah.
A rant.
Yeah. I did want to get into Clemson a little bit more because I think our listeners probably be more what the Notre Dame fan perception is over on the Syracuse game. I think there's a little bit of terror about it. Clemson is still kind of the bigger game. There's also terror about that, but for different reasons. Clemson's defensive line, when they have smoke Notre Dame, they have been great. And I guess, you know, we would talk about their offensive line too, but is this defensive line 2018 college football playoff good? Is it 2020 ACC championship level good when they had Tyler Davis, opposed to during the regular season when they didn't? How good is this group? Because, I mean, obviously they've recruited off the charts.
I mean, talent-wise, yeah, it's as good as any they've ever had there. The 2018 group, I think, was unique because not only were they super talented, but those guys worked their asses off. They want that was like a group of, if you could build players in a factory that wanted to win at all costs, like the RoboCop of like, my primary objective is to win at all costs. That was those guys. And I don't know that this group has quite that Tiller mentality that group did. And the other part is they've just not been healthy together. And the defensive line isn't really the same as the O-line, where you need to build some chemistry among the five guys there. But you do need those guys playing off of each other more. And like the last couple of weeks is the first time that they've had that whole group relatively healthy at the same time. And not just, I don't mean just this season. I mean, since they've been together the last 3 years, I think coming into, who did they have before Syracuse? Whatever.
Florida State.
That was, the Florida State game, I think, was the first time, or before that, since the start of 2020, when they were all on campus, I think they had played less than 50 snaps total together, those like five, the combination of those five guys. So KJ Henry has been dominant this season, and he's been great. Miles Murphy's been very good. They just got Xavier Thomas back the last couple of weeks. He's kind of coming along. The interior of the line has been good, but Brzee has sort of been in and out of the lineup. Rukurororo, who is my favorite name in college football to say, has actually been sort of underrated and very good as well. So they're deep and they're talented. I don't think that they have come close to reaching what their potential ceiling would be. So to me, this is one of, aside from quarterback, this is the thing that you say, like, well, what's the difference between a Clemson team that can make the playoff and a Clemson team that can win it all? I think it's how dominant they're going to be up front. And there are times, both against Syracuse last week and Florida State the week before, where they just absolutely devoured offensive lines and looked unstoppable. It just hasn't been the full 60 minutes that I've seen that. But I'm glad you brought up the offensive line too, because to me, I actually talked to Marcus Freeman a little bit earlier today, and he was like, I didn't see that offensive line last year, but that looks like a really good unit right now. Like, I don't see weaknesses on that unit. And to me, that has been, like, you can point to DJ, you can say the receiving corps, but that offensive line is night and day better than they were last year when they were not good at all, I don't think, last year. They just, I mean, again, you watch the game against Syracuse, they just handed the ball off and trucked that Syracuse front again and again and again.
What, were you in school last time Notre Dame played at Syracuse?
Man, what year was that?
They played in 2003. I actually covered the game.
That was actually so I went to Syracuse for grad school and I was there in 2004. So I missed it by a year. Everything good at Syracuse happened in 2003 and I missed all of it by a year.
I still remember Walter Reyes's first, second, third, fourth, and fifth touchdowns. Really. It was kind of one of those moments where you're like, yeah, it's not working out for Tyrone. This Tyrone Willingham thing, it's not happening.
Was that Pasqualoni or Greg Robinson?
It was.
That was Pasqualoni, but Greg Robinson also beat Notre Dame, which was really the only good thing that Greg Robinson did in his entire Syracuse tenure.
At that point, we already knew it wasn't working out for Charlie Weiss, so there was no great revelation as I was seeing that unfold.
I think that was one of those games where Notre Dame fans could be like, man, Mick, can we fire this guy now? And Syracuse fans were like, damn it, we're going to get another year with Greg Robinson now.
Cam Bantley's finest moments.
When's the last time you were back at your alma mater? And for Irish fans making their first trip in 19 years there, at least, what do they got to see other than dinosaur barbecue?
I'm a little out of touch because I haven't been up since pre-pandemic. I used to try and go up for a basketball game every year. And as you know, Matt, when you add kids to the equation, those weekend trips for a basketball game in central New York are not quite as easy as they used to be.
You see them at Cameron now in your backyard.
Yeah, that's right. Well, look, Syracuse is an underrated town, in my opinion. Going out, hanging out, drinking, whatever, Friday night, Saturday night, Armory Square area is where you probably want to like park yourself. There's lots of good places you can walk to right in there. Pastabilities, stupid name. Good spot to go get some food, though. If you go in, right, like around the game, like Marshall Street, you got Varsity Pizza. Everybody knows about. That's sort of like the good post game hangout. Fagan's right next door. Good spot for some booze. They'll be it's a little on the fratty side. But so here's my biggest thing, though. My biggest takeaway. So my favorite bar in Syracuse, absolute trash dive, terrible, terrible place, was called Chuck's, or Hungry Charlie's as it was, but Chuck's is what we called it. And that was my go-to when I was there, and I'd always go back to Chuck's and loved Chuck's. Well, as all things do, progress, quote-unquote progress, came, and they knocked down the old Chuck's and built apartment buildings there. It's right like off of Marshall Street. They have reopened a new Chuck's, and I have not been to it yet, and I find it hard to believe that you can recreate the level of grime and misery that occurred in the old Chuck's, like the number of times I've peed in the men's room sink because the line was too long. You can't just recreate that by rebuilding something.
You can if you're inventive enough, but.
Well, that's true. But anyway, I will be very interested. That, I would say that's my go to Chuck's, but I say that only with a little bit of reluctance and trepidation because I have not seen the new Chuck's, but I have to also believe, like, I mean, if your goal is to see how many beers you can get for like $12, that's your spot. You go to Chuck's. Like, pitcher's like $4, and you just walk around with a pitcher in your hand because it's easier than buying individual beers.
Well, I got a follow up on that one. I'm glad you brought up cheap beer, because every time I'm on a show with you, you bring up my finest moment at ESPN, and I have to bring it up.
Yes.
When I'm with you, I think we are having some kind of meetings at the Wide World of Sports, and I want to say 2014. Me, you, and Jared Shanker. I forget what the name of this test was, and I think you brought it up, as you do. It was a blindfold taste test between Bud Light, Miller Light, and Coors Light, and you claimed that no one could differentiate.
Well, I had just seen this like documentary about how like the big like InBev and those places had tried to corner the market and keep microbrews out. And one of the things that they were talking about is like the way that they sell macro brews is to make them all taste the same. And so that's why you see so many beer commercials, because the marketing and like the cans are the only way to differentiate the product that they're all, but everybody disagrees with this. Every single person you ever talk to will say, no, I could tell Miller, I could tell.
Yeah, and who actually proved it?
And the one guy who did it, Matt Fortuna. So bravo to you. You've accomplished nothing else in your life, contributed nothing else to the greater sports journalism. Yeah, went out on a high note.
I went out a high note. I had nothing left to prove at ESPN then. I went from doing Spreecast with you, Andrew, and Jared, to doing a podcast with Pete. So it's nice to have old friends and new friends play nice together on this show here. But yeah, you guys are much bigger beer snobs than I am. I love good old crappy beer, and I can do without some of the finer stuff, but to each their own.
Well, indistinguishable macro brews, there's a metaphor for like ACC football there outside of Clemson. Like, everything is actually the same.
Yeah,
quite possible.
Yeah, Virginia, Boston College, Duke. You're essentially Coors Light, Miller Light, Bud Light. Yeah.
Yeah,
there's no ingredients in here.
Somebody's. No, I don't know who. I think Georgia Tech is Ice House. I'm not sure.
Chip Long's an Ice House guy all the way. Come on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see it.
Yeah, he's a big macro brew guy. So getting into this weekend a little bit, like, I don't know, you're in your conversations with Marcus or dealings with him, like, there's a whole lot of insight to be gleaned about this weekend, but like, from a more of a distant view of Notre Dame football right now, what do you make of, I guess, Notre Dame season? Cause they've been, you know, five straight seasons of 10 wins or more, national players this year, really kind of off the national radar where they will stay, until next season, most likely. What is sort of your more national view on Notre Dame football this year?
Yeah, that's one of the things when I talked to Marcus was I asked him, like, what's the thought process inside the locker room right now? Like, not to say you're not, like, motivated still, but, you know, the expectations for Notre Dame are high every year. And when you lose a couple of games early and when you're not doing what you've expected, like, and you're here in the middle of the season, like, what's the energy level? What's the focus? What are the goals? And I think that this next two-game stretch actually says a lot, because it's two ranked teams in two relatively high-profile games. And I think look, you're not going to end the season saying, boy, Notre Dame had a great year. It's just not – that's not in the cards now. But I think there was an opportunity to end the season where, you know, I call it the Texas special, because Texas has a way of doing this every year, where somehow at the end of the season, we're all sold on Texas again, no matter what we saw in September and October. I think there's a little bit of an opportunity, though, to say, like, look, it was always going to be some rebuilding, new coach, new head coach, new quarterback. There was always going to be some turnover and some difficulties that you had to get through. But you go out, if you beat Syracuse and you beat Clemson, that narrative starts to change. And I think it becomes a springboard into what you're developing, because the recruiting has been good. The energy has been is good around Freeman, but you've got to show it on some wins. And this is a way to do it. And the other thing that he said, and I'm sure you guys have heard a million times at this point, is like, you've got to be at least offensively more than like trying to run the ball and then get the ball to Michael Mayer. There's got to be some other part of this offense. And so I think it's sort of like, you use a little bit of this last part of the season to kind of figure out what you can be, like to keep kind of pushing buttons to see if there's some lineup that works for you and starts making some more things happen and gives you a little more versatility. So I look at these next two games. I mean, I don't want to say season defining for Notre Dame, but I think people, if you win these next two and then potentially USC, I mean, I think people look back at the end of the year and say, pretty good season, like not what we hoped for at the beginning of the year, but pretty good season, excitement moving forward. If you don't, and you don't get any of them, or you only get one of those, like, yeah, maybe the conversation is very much like going into the offseason saying, like, I don't know, what is Notre Dame going to be under Mark? This is sort of about defining who you want to be moving forward, in my mind.
Yeah, I feel like it's like off-season defining more than season defining in some ways.
Right.
Does that make sense? Yeah. Like, you know, it's like we're talking about at Notre Dame for the 9-month offseason probably is going to hinge a lot on the next 2 weeks.
Oh, I mean, if you, no one will admit this after the success they've had the last 5 years, but I think if you told them before the year you're going to finish 9-3 in your new coach's debut with wins over Clemson and USC, most people would sign up for that. Now they wouldn't read the fine print that comes with that, and that's okay. But without a doubt, there's a lot. There's a lot to still, I think, be discovered about this team, for better or for worse, in the second half of the season. David, I'm going to ask you for your prediction, but I'm going to read off a bunch of stats to you before that. One of which I just stole from your Twitter account. Notre Dame is 31-4 against unranked ACC teams since semi-joining in 2014. Just 7-5 against ranked ACC teams during that time. These are all actually, again, from ESPN stats and info. Syracuse 6-1 against the spread this season, tied for the second best in the country. 5-1 against the spread as a home favorite since the start of last season, second best over that span. Notre Dame, 8-2 against the spread in road games since the start of 2020, the best road cover percentage in the country over that span. And Notre Dame is 3-0 against the spread as a road underdog since the start of last season. How do you see Saturday playing out?
I don't think this is going to be a particularly pretty football game. I don't know if it's gouge your eyes out like watching Virginia, but I don't think it's going to be a particularly pleasant experience for anybody. I could see this being like a 23-20 type of game. I wonder what this means for Syracuse coming off of such a heartbreaker last week. I tend to think like this is, I feel like I don't know a lot about either team in the big picture at this point. Like nothing would necessarily surprise me. But I feel like I am a little bit more confident in Notre Dame. I think like 23-20 Notre Dame is about where my head's at right now.
I'm going to hate myself for this, but I kind of agree with you. Like, Notre Dame hasn't really done Notre Dame hasn't really done anything to really earn any of our faith this year. But it reminds me, I wouldn't say the Carolina game, because, you know, they played really well that game and Carolina's better than Q's, but it just reminds me a little bit of that vibe of, all right, they followed up a loss with a win. They're going on the road. They're a 3-point underdog. No one really knows what to expect from them. I think there are going to be some plays for them to run the ball, and as long as they don't turn it over, I think they will win this one. I know a couple weeks ago I'd said I had this circled as a loss, but that was also because I thought they'd beat Stanford. So my 7-5 prediction will hold up if they win here, assuming they lose to Clemson and USC later. Although I don't know, I could talk myself into them hanging with Clemson depending on how this week looks, just based on.
This has been like such a weird season because I could talk myself into almost anything, right? Like, right. Okay, I'm pretty sure Ohio State's really good. I'm going to give Georgia the benefit of the doubt because they just won a national championship. I'm not sure that I like totally buy anybody else. Like, there's not, I don't know. I feel like I've got less of a grip on the bulk of the country this year than I've had in a long time.
I would argue the hottest team in the country right now is one that lost its opener by 46 points.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great, like,
Bo Nix for Heisman. I'm not saying that facetiously. Like, imagine hearing those words.
It took him a week to get the Auburn stink off of him, and now he's a good player.
It does feel like a college football season where like human nature is in the ascendancy. Like I think there's been a handful of coaches. Brian Kelly was one of them at Notre Dame. Like you just knew what you were going to get every week. And now we don't, which makes it a hell of a lot more fun unless you're a fan of Notre Dame, because you would prefer to go back to knowing you're going to win every game that you're supposed to win. And just like you swallow hard when you play Ohio State and move on. But it's not good for predictions, that's for sure. It's probably not good for fan health.
Good for Vegas.
My bank account has taken a tiny little hit this year.
You know, you're excellent for narrative. You're wearing an Eagles hat as you record this. Your alma mater's having its best season in forever, and your baseball team's in the World Series. So, like, you can't complain. Like, you're the jaded Philly guy. You're allowed to like be happy at least. I'm actually pulling for the Phillies because they're playing the Astros. But until this weekend, at least, you're allowed to enjoy this moment.
Yeah, I think I would. I feel like my prediction for Notre Dame here is based solely on the fact that Dino Babers kicked the field goal at the end of the 2018 game instead of like going for the touchdown when they're getting shut out. And like the karma consequences of that should carry over 4 years later when Notre Dame goes to formerly the Carrier Dome. So, but 23-20, 17-16, just like kind of an oddball score game.
47.5 is pretty high over under for these two.
24 points feels like a lot for somebody to win the game with, to me. So.
I just feel like somebody's going to miss an extra point somewhere that's going to be very problematic.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like a super clean game. So, but Notre Dame is like punt block extraordinaire. So I could see like them blocking a punt, but when they fall on it, they fumble it out of the back of the end zone. So it's a safety instead of a touchdown.
Or like weird scores. Michael Mayer makes a catch of the season in the red zone and then they go 4 and out and come out empty on that same drive. Like that's kind of been emblematic of this season as well. I will say we mentioned bowl stuff earlier. Pete, in your mailbag today, I think it was towards the end, you threw out a hypothetical in there that has got me 10 times more jacked up for the end of the season than I otherwise would have been, which is the slim possibility of Notre Dame meeting LSU in a bowl game, which, I mean, I know you wrote that you wouldn't even be able to handle that narrative, but after the season Notre Dame has had and the slog it's been, I think that would be, I wouldn't say poetic justice, but that would just be awesome. Like, I cannot, like, we got excited for Mike Leach facing Texas Tech last year, but that divorce happened a decade earlier and the game was terrible. This one, I just think, would be amazing, absolutely amazing, including Brian Kelly. He'd have to wear that T-shirt of himself dancing that he wore last week to troll Lane Kiffin. I could think of no better or fitting way to end the season.
Well, now that like Ed Orgeron is like besties with Marcus Freeman, like
he was at the Stanford game.
He's got to go to the game.
He's got to go, yeah.
And be on the Notre Dame sideline.
Be the honorary coin toss.
That'd be amazing.
I mean, there's too much good stuff happening there. That would not be the end of the Notre Dame season that any of us deserve, but.
Oh, it'd be the perfect.
I'd be there to cover it if it happens. That's for certain.
They would completely deserve it if they go 7-5.
By the way, if Ed was at the Stanford game and has been spending a lot of time around Notre Dame, Notre Dame's having a down year. The other place he's been spending all of his time is Miami, and Miami's a train wreck. Is all of this his fault somehow? Mm.
The curse of that.
It could be. I mean, there might be a deep dive.
And the place he left is ranked number 18 in the country right now, at 6-2. Go for
that. Also, like I wrote off LSU like 3 weeks ago. I was like, I don't think they're very good. And now, like this is what I'm saying about this season. Like even when I'm watching the teams, I'm like, wait, you're good? I forgot about that.
I'm
still not convinced they're good.
Like they're a Brian Kelly team. Like they were down what 17-3, I think, to Ole Miss. Like they start so slow.
Were they down 14-0 to Auburn?
Yeah, the FSU game, which they should have won. I mean, they didn't show up for 2.5 quarters. It is a typical Brian Kelly team. I had no doubt he'd win there. I didn't think he'd win this much this soon. And again, that could change in 2 weeks when they play Alabama and if A&M ever gets their stuff together and beats them in the finale. But it's been pretty impressive, I will say. The Tennessee game was so bad that I wrote them off. And then it's like, wait, Tennessee's actually really freaking good this year. Like maybe right. National title good. There's no shame in that. But it's definitely been one of those years so far. David, are you going to be in Syracuse or will you be in South Bend next week? Will we see you?
I will definitely not be in Syracuse, unfortunately. TBD on South Bend. I have not heard any info. As you're well aware from your ESPN time, nobody tells you anything until the last minute.
Oh, so I've gotten emails from games I wasn't at saying, can you write, are you at the press conference? Yeah. Like, no, you didn't send me. Yeah. I'm not there. Don't you remember that?
on the narrative point, can you imagine November 5th, Notre Dame is playing Clemson while Brian Kelly and LSU are playing Alabama, and just how stressful that could be for the Notre Dame fan base, depending on the result, if the results of those two games go a certain way, or how just exalting a feeling that could be for the Notre Dame fan base if those results go a different way. That may be more of an interesting story than the game itself. I may be talking myself into a different kind of coverage of Notre Dame Clemson here on November 5th. So David, you should come out for that.
My eternal LSU Bama memory was 2011, that 9-6 overtime, the game of the century. And Pete, we were in the press box at Wake Forest, the Jim Grobe Wake Forest team that Notre Dame just barely beat. And Wake, I don't know if they still do this, but they welcome fans like basically on the field for a post-game picnic. And it was a night game, and they put on the overtime of that LSU-Bama game for the fans to watch. And we're all like watching it out of the corner of our eye while talking to Brian Kelly after what was a pretty miserable game amid a miserable season. And I think Brian Driscoll asked him a question about Tommy Rees struggling, Tommy Rees the quarterback back then. And Kelly just lost his stuff on him and started reciting his stats, his win-loss record as a starter. We're like, all right, cool, whatever. Oh, look, LSU just won. Like, maybe we'll have something similar with Clemson in the house this week. I don't know. There is a Jumbotron in our name now. They can make that happen.
That'd be interesting if they could flash up, if Alabama's winning 42-10, if they put up highlights of that in game of Notre Dame Clemson just for the sake of karma.
We may be losing to Clemson, however.
Yeah.
Look what's happening in the Valley right now.
All right. Well, David, thanks for hopping on with us, talking a little Syracuse, a little Clemson. Hopefully we see you up here on November 5th for that one. It should be fun and narrative full, which we all love as reporters. So appreciate it. And thanks for the recommendations for getting into a little bit of trouble this weekend in upstate New York. We'll try to put that into action on Friday and Saturday.
Yeah. Let me know your thoughts on Chuck's. If it's not terrible enough, I'll make a trip up there in the off season to try and defile it slightly more.
Lovely. All right. He's David. Matt, I'm Pete. Thanks for being with us on the latest episode of The Shamrock.